Authorities have announced a new ceasefire in Ukraine to allow citizens to escape from towns around the capital of Kyiv and several southern cities and Sumy in the northeast. To try to better understand what has been happening since Russia invaded, we have reached a former NATO executive who lives here in Nova Scotia. Susan Pond has more than 30 years' experience working with NATO in Belgium, Ukraine, and the USA. She was responsible for the establishment of the NATO liaison office in Kyiv, and throughout her career, she has focused and was focused on Ukraine's defense and security. She retired in 2019, but still has some connections to people on the ground there. We have reached her at her home in the South Shore. Susan Pond, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon to you, Jeff, and thank you for the invitation to join you on Main Street.
No, I think that you've got a very special set of knowledge here that can help us understand things. One of the things that you worked with, my understanding is, as a NATO liaison in Ukraine, is to help improve governance in Ukraine's defense and security. Can you tell us a bit about the nature of that work?
Well, there are lots of, you know, Canada being an example of one nation, but other of my NATO colleagues who looked at improving Ukraine's operational capabilities, and you're seeing the results of that, I think, on the way the Ukrainians are operating on the ground now. But my focus was on improving their institutional capacity so they could manage a Ministry of Defense and employ good practices. And at the beginning, certainly, and continuing problem is to reduce the risk of corruption in the defense and security sector. I mean, Ukraine is a democratic country, but it is a seriously flawed democracy and still has a lot of work to do. But they've made a lot of progress since 1991 when they gained their independence.
In terms of Ukraine's determination to join the EU, I would be interested to hear your opinion on Vladimir Putin's statements that democracy and joining the EU is not for countries like Ukraine.
Well, I think it's for the Ukrainians to decide what their future is. I mean, we went through two world wars and came out of that setting out a charter of the United Nations, which was to respect the territorial and political integrity of states. I mean, we lived through a period when capitals, you know, colonial capitals in London and Lisbon and, you know, many other places drew lines on the map to try to influence the future of, you know, largely smaller countries. I would hope that we've gone beyond that now, and it's for nations to decide whether what arrangements that they have for their security and their economic prosperity. So I'm you know, definitely not in favor of Mr. Putin's assessment. I think it's for the Ukrainians to decide.
What impact? President Zelensky was he spoke before British Parliament yesterday. He's been invited to speak before our House of Commons. He received a resounding ovation from British Parliament yesterday, asking for increased sanctions. You know, a pledge of solidarity with Ukrainian people, and a no-fly zone. Can you foresee, is that something that you could ever see NATO saying, yeah, let's do this. We gotta even the playing field a little bit and make sure that, you know, that the Russians are not using, you know, vacuum bombs or cluster bombs? Or is that just something NATO's just going to, like, we absolutely cannot get into that?
Well, I can certainly understand why the president of Ukraine is making this request. I think every time I've heard him speak, I think he's repeated this request. If I was in his shoes, I'm sure I would be making the same request.
Absolutely.
As well. The NATO treaty doesn't forbid the alliance from doing this, but this is, you know, you're making a political assessment and weighing risks, and the risk, as I see it, is that enforcing for NATO forces to undertake a challenge of a so-called no-fly zone has the risk of bringing NATO forces and Russian forces in direct confrontation. You know, when people say they want a no-fly zone, what they really have to understand is they're really asking for a shoot-down zone.
Yeah.
Because you have to be prepared to
enforce it.
Exactly. So you have, you know, I have no reason to believe that the Russians would respect a no-fly zone. So then you run the risk of confrontation between aircraft in the same space. And also you have artillery in Belarus and Russia, which can fire over the border on NATO aircraft, you know, assuming, you know, that was to take place. And then you have, you know, then you have the chance of, you know, NATO aircraft, you know, firing weapons into Russia or Belarus. And, you know, the prospect of this becoming even, you know, uglier and, you know, more tragic and expanding this to, you know, the Third World War. I think, it's just exponentially greater. So it's really balancing risks where you think you can, you know, contain risks and still support the president. These are not easy decisions. Obviously.
No, and I would think that that line, or certainly from where I sit, uneducated viewpoint though it may be, I see that Vladimir Putin, you know, says that sanctions are viewed as an act of war. If you start, you know, if Poland says, okay, well, we'll supply Ukraine with air. With aircraft, and then the United States says, and we'll make sure that if Poland is down aircraft because they want to support any of their neighbors, we'll put things. He's saying, no, that to me is too. Is there a very real risk that it doesn't matter, that at a certain point Putin's just going to say, no, you're the fact that you're just not with me means you're against me?
Well, I mean, NATO nations, including Canada, are already providing significant, you know, lethal hardware to Ukraine. The prospect of planes could be one more element. I'm not inside the head of President Putin,
no.
So I don't know why, you know, he might draw the line there and not someplace else. But clearly there's a high risk of this going, you know, beyond the borders of Ukraine. I mean, he's kind of thrown out, I would say, the rule book. He's not, you know, respecting the, you know, the usual norms that have been developed, you know, our rule-based order that we've developed over the second, you know, since the Second World War,
yeah.
That countries like Canada have, you know, helped to establish and nurture, and all of that is kind of thrown out the window. So he's very unpredictable, and I think we have to be, you know, we have to be prepared. I think, you know, democracies generally are under threat everywhere. Ukraine is just the latest, you know, manifestation. And we're kind of on back heels, I think, you know, that those forces that are against democracy have, you know, tried to, you know, pick at those weaknesses. You know, it takes longer to build consensus in democracies. And so then it often takes longer to respond than, you know, autocrats and dictators can. But that's not necessarily a weakness, because you can do more. You know, when I joined NATO initially, there were 16 members. They're now 30. It takes longer to make a decision, but you can do more with 30 than you can with 16. So
I'm wondering if you have any thoughts, too. I spoke with Oral Brown, who is an international relations professor at the University of Toronto, and I asked him, what if Ukraine falls? What's the risk if Ukraine falls? And he had said, you know, that he saw this almost as a domino effect, that then there's a threat to Finland and Sweden, who have also wanted to join, you know, have talked about joining NATO. And Vladimir Putin has also said, particularly to Finland, that no, I don't, that doesn't work for me at all. So I'm wondering if you've given that any thought about what might be down the line.
Well, I think, in fact, you know, we should be thinking about this more. I understand why, you know, decision makers and our political leaders are focused on, you know, what's before them, because this is, you know, horrendous. Watching the news is, you know, heartbreaking. But I think we should be thinking long term. What's going to happen now? I must say, I think the worst is still yet to come. But I'm, you know, the Ukrainian people have spines of steel. So I'm not sure, you know, that the Russians are, you know, even if they overtake the cities, if they continue their advance, that they would be able to, you know, hold Ukraine. That I can imagine that this could be, you know, a quagmire like the Soviet forces in Afghanistan. You know, that they will never, you know, they'll never fully control.
It'll become an insurrection.
Yeah, they'll never be able to fully control, because the Ukrainians will just keep on annoying them and attacking them. But we have to think, you know, it could be a situation, you know, like a divided Germany, as we had at the end of the Second World War. So you have to look at the long term. You know, is that maybe kind of a short term solution? And who could have imagined that in 89 you would see a reunited Germany? Western Germany, you know, thrived, built democratic institutions, became a powerhouse within Europe, fully, you know, democratic, and then was able to welcome back, you know, their eastern part. So, you know, there's different scenarios, but I would not underestimate the Ukrainian people and their resolve. Yeah. They're not going to make it easy for the Russians.
Well, they certainly haven't thus far. Susan, thank you so much. This has been...
Great pleasure.
Okay, be well.
You too.
Susan Pond is a former NATO executive, was responsible for the establishment of the NATO liaison office in Kyiv. She lives on the South Shore.